This is the CSIS Global Health Interview Series at www.smartglobalhealth.org.
Since August, Zimbabwe slips into a cholera epidemic with over 560 reported deaths among over 12,000 confirmed cases, according to the United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs. Today, the New York Times has reported that Zimbabwe has declared a health state of emergency. These health developments have not occurred in a vacuum. Here to talk about cholera, the political situation in Zimbabwe, and to look ahead on this escalating crisis is Dr. J. Stephen Morrison, director of the CSIS Global Health Policy Center. Dr. Morrison, will you please talk about the breakdown of the health system in Zimbabwe over the recent days?
Thank you. Thank you, Eric. As the Zimbabwean economy has ground to a halt and entered a deep crisis, the medical system has not been immune. 80% of your personnel, your doctors, your nurses, your lab experts have departed the country and are not likely to return. So the overall capacity of the health sector is radically diminished by this worsening crisis. In the meantime, the absence of foreign exchange, the rampant 230% inflation rate has contributed to a breakdown in the provision of drugs, sanitation, medical equipment, all of the major critical inputs, and it's becoming impossible to pay salaries for those workers who do remain on post, those health workers that do remain on post. So before the cholera outbreak, we had this dramatic decline and decay of the health infrastructure, a health infrastructure that historically has been among the best in Africa and provided among the best primary quality of primary care to Zimbabwean citizens. So it's especially tragic to see that happen. Now, on top of that, you see a dramatic explosion of cholera infections through it's a contamination that's borne by water. It's a reflection of the breakdown of sewage control, a breakdown of the treatment systems, a breakdown of the piping system and the management of solid waste, so that what is happening is that the cholera is migrating into the drinking system and that you're having this contamination across the board, and this contamination is spreading throughout the country. The numbers have now reached rather staggering proportions. Over 12,500 cases of recorded cholera outbreaks, almost 600 recorded deaths within Zimbabwe. You have an export of the infections into the surrounding region, over 500 infections reported in South Africa, 300 in Mozambique, along with deaths. Another thing that's very important to record is the high mortality. Under normal circumstances, when there's a cholera outbreak in a country that has a functioning health system, you'll have less than 1% mortality. Overall, within Zimbabwe today, the mortality is running somewhere around 4 to 5%, which is a pretty staggeringly high rate in many rural areas and places where the infrastructure is absent and where the protections and knowledge of the means to protect have been weak. We have mortality at 20, 30, and in some cases 50%. That is truly staggering. So as a point of comparison, the last major cholera outbreak in Zimbabwe was in 2002. That was less than 3,500 reported cases. So in a very, very short period of time, you've had reported rates that are a multiple of four times the level of what we saw during a very severe outbreak in 2002. Another point of context here is that Zimbabwe did work in previous eras. People are not in the habit of boiling their water before they drink or cook. They are not in the habit of dealing with mass contamination. And so this is a pervasive, systemic crisis that touches the lives of a very high proportion of the population. It is inducing panic. It is inducing a shutdown of water systems. And it's coming in a context in which hospitals and clinics had already been shuttered as a result of this crisis.
Can you talk briefly about the breakdown of the social order as it relates to the cholera epidemic, including the health situation, the military protests, and the role of health employees in protesting the outbreak?
This crisis in Zimbabwe, this political crisis, has been underway now since the late 90s and early part of this decade, and it's been a progression. Over that course, you've had different periods of political protest. The political protest has been manifest most dramatically in the willingness of voters to go to polls and vote in support of the opposition in defiance of clear threats of intimidation and violence during the March elections, national elections, in which the opposition party, the MDC, under the leadership of Morgan Tsvangirai, won the election outright. Those who stepped forward to vote suffered grievously at the hands of a very systematic and pervasive effort of violence that was undertaken thereafter across the country. What we're seeing right now are new forms of social protest and a widening mobilization. You had, 10 days ago, you had 1,000 health workers on the street protesting. That's unprecedented. That's a very high proportion of the remaining skilled health workforce within the country. They confronted over 100 heavily armed police. Yesterday in Harare, you had another 100 health workers protest and again confront police. At the same time, what we're seeing are teachers, union members, human rights activists, and most interestingly, soldiers going on the street within Harare, defying the ban on protest, defying the threat of violence at the hands of heavily armed police to protest the fact that they are in a desperate situation. They are not getting paid. They're not able to go to their local banks and withdraw any money of any significance to be able to have a daily survival budget. And people are now beginning to take to the streets.
Is this many times before we've heard that this there might be a new threshold, a new opportunity for political change in Zimbabwe? Do you believe that this new situation warrants consideration to be such a potential opportunity?
Well, I think that something is afoot. I mean, the gravity of this crisis has reached a point where a different dynamic is visible, a different dynamic in terms of the willingness of people to take to the streets and defy the authorities. That's one point. The second fact is that it's regionalized. The medical emergency in the form of the cholera outbreaks is being exported across the region. It's setting off alarm bells. It's coming in the midst of a continued stalemate in the September 15th unity agreement that was brokered by former South African President Thabo Mbeki under the auspices of the regional body, the Southern African Development Community, SADC. That power-sharing agreement has been deadlocked. Mugabe government has been unwilling to make the constitutional changes to create a newly empowered prime minister, that Morgan Tsvangirai would occupy that post. They've been unwilling to yield control over the ministries that were agreed to in the power sharing, particularly on finance and on home affairs, which accounts for the police. South African government appears to be changing its position. It appears to be moving towards exerting greater pressure upon the Mugabe government to come to its senses. The other thing that is happening here is that the government of Zimbabwe has itself declared a national health emergency and begun to issue ever more desperate pleas for international assistance. The World Health Organization has dispatched 6 cholera experts on an urgent basis to get to Zimbabwe. This country cannot manage this crisis on its own. That is clear. This this crisis is of a grave scale that requires a massive international mobilization. It's not something that can be addressed on a sort of community-by-community pilot basis by an NGO here and an NGO there. The international community, I would expect, will push to be responsive, but make clear that this is going to require major political compromise on the part of the Mugabe administration. It remains to be seen whether South Africa fundamentally alters its perspective. South Africa has been negligent and highly criticized for taking, at almost every point, taking the position, taking the perspective of the Mugabe government, and not using the leverage that it has effectively to bring about serious change. That may be ending, but it remains to be seen.
Can you briefly talk about U.S. leverage and engagement in Zimbabwe and how the political developments impact U.S. interests and where the U.S. could be involved in these negotiations?
Well, U.S. leverage has remained fairly limited, particularly because the South Africans have had a lock on the negotiations and have the support of most of the SADC member regional states. It's created a cordon. It's limited the ability of the U.S. to have terribly much engagement. However, I think that is beginning to change. I think this issue is becoming internationalized. I think the South African credibility in the negotiations is pretty well squandered. People are going to have to move to a different format and a different approach. And as this becomes internationalized, it becomes possible to bring it back to the U.N. Security Council. And moreover, as I said earlier, dealing with this crisis requires significant resources that will come from outside of Zimbabwe and outside of the region. That is a point of leverage. And the overall reconstruction of this country is going to require a major coordinated multilateral effort. The U.S. will be at the table and will have leverage that comes with that.
This has been a CSIS Global Health Policy Center podcast at www.smartglobalhealth.org.